Yeah, so this is Burns. The resummation technique that you mentioned, it reminds me a lot of in time-dependent, what is it called, perturbation theory of standard quantum mechanics. You can, instead of doing the Dyson series, which has just a sum, a different series called Magnus series expansion, which preserves unitarity. In this resummation case, are these benefits also related to somehow enforcing unitarity in the perturbative expansion?
Unitarity, you mean?
If that is somehow related in this picture.
Well, not really. I mean, it's close. I mean, the one thing that sorry, I'm trying to get to the formulas. Such a formula, for example. So, unitarity and perturbation theory is always it's a nonlinear relation. Unitarity, right? So it only is correct up to the order that you work, but there are some overshoot terms. The only time unitarity is there at all orders is usually in parton showers. There, that the probability of a particle splitting into anything, including nothing, is always one. So parton showers are implemented to be unitary. But the same limitations you have in fixed order perturbation theory, that unitarity is not quite complete, is complete up to the order that you compute, but there might be overshoot terms you have here as well, except that the overshoot terms are here. So I think that's where unitarity corrections, but they're fairly small.
Yeah. So, Alanis Bastia Sharma from Amsterdam NICEF. What are processes where theory is really lacking in precision when compared to experiment? And can you briefly explain why particularly those processes are so hard to calculate?
Well, certainly all processes could use an upgrade. Adrelian is really challenged by experiment. I mean, the experimental precision is higher now than theoretical one. But if you go to high multiplicity, if you have four or five jets, there we don't know how to do two-loop calculations, right? So NLO, which involves two-loop, is really the new standard, but it's not achieved everywhere. So certainly high multiplicity cross-sections, which become accessible at the LHC. You have huge data rates, a lot of energy. You can easily make a couple of jets in addition to anything that you really want to study. That's where we lack still the higher order calculations. There's progress being made, impressive progress, but it's just really complicated.
Hi, Anna Maria, LMU. So I'm curious about the speed of the computations, because you, for instance, showed us at least two methods for calculating the loop diagrams. So, for instance, if you would now be considering the diagrams contributing to the Higgs production cross-section, so how much can you maybe estimate around? Like, how much would it take, for instance, if you would consider the standard method to compute the loops, and, for instance, these other differential equations for loops method?
Well, usually at these very high-order calculations, whatever method works, they use, right? For the Higgs one that I showed, which involves 7 million loop diagrams, and then you have all the radiative diagrams. There, certainly the speed was an issue. I mean, you saw the enormous amount of CPU time. They actually did not compute the radiative part, the full contribution exactly. They expanded it in something called 1 minus e, the distance from threshold, and they did a power expansion in that. Rather than the exact calculation, but they did rather careful, because they went not to the lowest order or the next order in the 1 minus z, but to 37 order. So they computed 37 terms in that expansion, just to make sure that this 37 term was almost a zero correction on the 36 term. And I said, okay, now we know it. That took a lot of computing time. In terms of the computing speed for different methods for loop diagrams. Well, these analytical expressions, of course, once you have them, it's a quick evaluation in the computer code. There are methods that try and not do a diagram per diagram, but combine all the diagrams together into a large amplitude calculation and do something on the whole amplitude rather than, you can imagine if you have 7 million diagrams, you do, say, a numerical evaluation of each, and then you add them up. The uncertainty is going to be enormous just from the numerical uncertainty. So they try to take care of all of these things. I think certainly the high loop diagrams in terms of speed comparison is, not that many, but they're usually happy with what they can get. But it is an issue, that's true.
Yeah, indeed, you can ask, how does the situation compare with the older procedures? I remember in the early days of the Schoonschip program by Veldman, he had to go to very high precision because there were enormous cancellations in diagrams. So he went maybe not hundreds, but a very large number of decimal places. How is the situation in the approximations you are using? Do you again have fantastic cancellations that you have to go to very high precision to get the answer right?
Yes, so that's still an issue. It depends also on particular gauge choices you make that can improve or not improve certain intermediate calculations. Usually they manage, but often takes a lot of computer time and careful managing of which subgroups of diagrams you add together, usually the gauge invariant subsets that have a good, that have better numerical behavior than just all of them added together numerically. But they are managing, there's a group in Zurich also that is usually something called local unitarity that uses a completely numerical approach to loop integrations, and they seem to get some results out. I mean, there's jitter in the plots, but these are two loop calculations. In some extreme cases, for more theoretical purposes, they've done 17 loop calculations numerically, using called tropical geometry, but they haven't applied it yet to LHC things. But I made a remark just to show you that also in the numerical precision area, which is mostly challenged when you do everything numerical, a lot of progress is being made. And people are trying to get, I mean, that would be ideal, right? You select your process, select the number of the order and perturbation theory, press the button, the computer runs, and then out comes the plot. That would remove people like me from the equation.
But you're sure you're not outside the domain of the accuracy of the actual machine?
That you might run into that, but so far they managed to keep it into account.
Just to be sure, is there any other question? Yes?
Yes, hi, Angelopoulos Panas here. So I would like to ask, if I understand correctly, we use the iconal approximation, which really simplifies things since we can just factorize some parts of the diagram. Could we go beyond that? And is there any reason to, or it's always valid that...
Thank you for that question. That's exactly what I'm currently working on. It's true, this next iconal approximation. So just to give you a bit of a... That's this slide. I want to tell you a little bit more. Oops. I talked about the iconal. So here, you see in the iconal approximation, you just get this. This is the rigorous approximation. Delete k here, delete the k squared there, because k is small. Very low momentum, very soft. If you keep the next term in this k expansion, you get something here. I will not give it. If you look at the case of the fermion, here at the lowest order you get the same as for the scalar emitted, but if you also keep the next term here, you get a second correction which is different than the one from the scalar. So at the next iconal level, you start becoming sensitive to the spin of the emitter. And it's the same thing, you become sensitive to the recoil effect, this K here. So as you go to the next iconal approximation, you become more sensitive to interesting physics. The recoil of the particle that emitted the soft gluon and the spin that emitted it. So one thing I'm working on with others is Are there similar systematic patterns at that level that allow you to construct an exponential form? Or is there some no predictive power at all? And what we're finding is that there is exponential structure, but we haven't, only leading log so far, not next to leading log at all orders, but that's still under active investigation. It's a very interesting problem, I find, and certainly an interesting question.
Thank you very much.
Hi, I'm Gábor Balassa from the Wigner Institute, and my question is, in functional methods in QCD, when they solve the Dyson-Schwinger or Beatty-Salpeter equations, they have an infinite tower of diagrams and they cut it at some point because they cannot solve it. So do you think these formulas you showed could help solving this problem? Maybe go, there is an approximation called rainbow ladder approximation. Maybe they can go beyond rainbow ladder?
That's a bit of a difference. So the Peter-Salpeter is and the Schwinger-Dyson, that's for bound states, right? So we get the issue of how do you deal with the bound state formation.
Yes.
It is related a bit to this, the resummation I talk about. In fact, when you say make a top anti-top quark pair, or a squark anti-squark pair, or a gluina-gluina pair, if they exist, just above threshold, they're close to each other in phase space, and they might well start exchanging gluons to start forming a bound state. So we in some resummations, we've included these Coulomb effects, we call them. But the Beta-Salpeter equation is really indeed a ladder equation, and there's some refinements into how you approximate that kernel, the one you iterate again and again, just the box, or including the cross, or maybe even or even self-energy corrections. You can make various approximations there. There's nothing easy to say about it, except you must be very careful that you, what you include is consistent, and consistent at both at finite and at all orders. That's more or less all I know about it.
Thank you.
Yes, Zohan Lelouch again. So the partonic processes are only one step in these long calculations. You mentioned parton showers and hadronization. To what extent are the partonic processes the limiting factor? I mean, you have a very sort of, this is a rigorous part of the calculation, and where you have an expansion, you can resum logs in a controlled fashion. Then it seems that things become a lot less rigorous down the chain. At which point is really the limiting factor? Maybe you said this yesterday, but I wasn't here.
Well, the limiting factor is, so if you see, it's an interesting theory, right? We live in one phase of it, the hadronic phase, and we, in this formula, including the parton distribution function hadronization, is the match to a different world, the quark-gluon world. So that is, it's at that matching level that the limitations lie. So the formula in itself is valid up to certain power corrections, non-perturbative corrections. Then in each of the ingredients there are non-perturbative corrections. The partonic cross-section themselves has some slight ambiguity from when you go to all orders due to Renormalon effects, that you don't know everything perfect. So there's limitations everywhere. But the biggest one is indeed the interface between the parton level and the hadron level. That is just one that we cannot do ab initio, not yet, and where we have to use clever tricks or define variables which are not sensitive to the transition, such as total cross sections. So that's usually where the limitations lie.
Just to continue a bit, so how do you control these other parts of the calculation, and how much of it is cooking?
It depends on which part. So the parton distribution functions, that's a clear thing that I discussed extensively yesterday, and that the control is take seriously uncertainties from the data that go into the fit. And recently also theoretical uncertainties actually have entered it. So that's how you control it. And for the final state stuff, the hadronization when the quarks and gluons flying to the detector become parton, that's difficult. You do that usually at the Monte Carlo level. And defining jet algorithms, for example, that are insensitive to such power collections. That's one way of controlling it. And finally, when you collide two protons, you take one parton out of each to do the collision, but it could be that there's other collisions from the other protons, spectators, the so-called underlying event. Right, so how do you model that? Because that will produce stuff in the detector, and that's done by very phenomenological models in Monte Carlo. So it depends on the ingredient.
Okay. Well, I think we have to go on. Thank you very much for the nice discussions. And now, in this Professor Zikivi.